You enter the room, self-conscious, unsure, and anxious.
A sea of suits with high energy and grating voices launch the standard clichés at each other. Some in groups, some in pairs, you on the outside. This is your own worst nightmare. Yes, you're at a networking event.
You feel a familiar knot tightening in your stomach as you scan the floor for someone you may have connected with before. You really need to find some leads, but you just don't know where to start.
Taking a deep breath and downing the drink in your hand, you march towards someone to spark off a conversation, but start to hold back when you can't think of what to say. You catch their eye, they smile, you smile, they talk to someone else.
As time ticks by, you finally strike up a conversation with a really interesting person. Talk flows freely, light but well focused on work. But as your ideas dry up and your new best friend looks distracted, they make their excuses and move on. No connection on LinkedIn, no email, no lead.
Confidence dented and too much Dutch courage from alcohol, you take your leave. What a washout.
We've all been there. Wasted a great opportunity and feeling dejected and exhausted by the end of the event. But it doesn't have to be this way.
What if we told you there was a science-backed answer to your networking nightmare and that we could give you the power to be a top networker?
Hello and welcome to How to Hack the Brain. I'm Ziva Goddard.
And I'm Raffi March. This is the podcast where we figure out how to solve your everyday problems using behavioural science as our guide.
In today's episode, we're going to give you the secrets to networking so that you can find those connections and even a few business leads.
Joe Preston, director at communications agency Team Spirit, will be talking to us about what she looks for at networking events, as well as some horror stories.
And we'll be speaking with organisational psychologist and networking guru, Dr. Amantha Imber, getting her top tips for your next networking event.
Finally, I'll be going undercover at a real networking event, so you can hear the behavioural science and the expert advice in action.
So then, Raffi, are you a natural networker?
This is a really difficult area for me. I think I come across as quite a confident person. I love social interaction. I get my energy from people. But as soon as it becomes important, as soon as I actually need to make a connection with someone, it's terrifying.
It is funny. I think lots of people have that. Lots of people clam up that you would never, ever expect. I know you think I'm probably a better networker than I am, but I don't look forward to it. I think it's a really false situation often.
I think it can feel false, and often I will wait for people to approach me rather than approaching them, because I think that makes me feel more safe. But, you know, I'll end up at the end of a conference that we've paid lots of money for. I won't have spoken to anyone.
Yes. I think you've got to remember that everyone's in the same boat.
100%. What's weird, though, is if I was at a party, I would love the idea of knowing no one and going striking up some conversations. I'd want to go and chat, because I could be anyone. I could be anything to them. But if I'm networking, I can't be anything. I have to be someone specific. And trying to put forward that version of me is quite daunting.
But that is the fascinating thing about behaviour, isn't it? It's so context dependent. You can take the same person with the same beliefs and value systems and put them in a totally different context and something totally different happens. So you're not alone. And don't worry, we're going to help you in this episode. So the sad truth of the matter, actually, is that face-to-face networking really does matter. A recent study showed that around 70% of jobs are not actually advertised on job websites, and around 85% of positions are filled by referrals rather than candidates with no previous connection to the company.
Yes, and we know a huge amount of communication between people is non-verbal. So although many meetings and events have moved online, there really is no suitable substitution for in-person, face-to-face interactions for building strong relationships.
Exactly. So I think some of the reasons that people get so overwhelmed by networking is just that people are really worried about looking silly. I think you're in quite a vulnerable position often in a room full of people that you don't know. And I think often it brings up these sort of feelings of rejection that you might go over to someone and they don't want to speak to you, or actually they're having a really good conversation with someone else, or you don't look like the sort of person that is going to be interesting enough for them or vibrant enough or whatever it might be. I think these insecurities really bubble up to the surface when you're feeling vulnerable.
Absolutely. And one reason for that might be imposter syndrome. And obviously having these feelings of inadequacy that are there despite actually you are successful. It's actually incredibly typical, especially in women. We find it's really common that they experience imposter syndrome. And the worrying thing is that despite all of your accomplishments, you might become exposed as a fraud. And that does make networking quite scary.
Coupled with the fact that it often feels quite important. So we overweight the importance of that situation and the connections that we're meant to get out of it for our own relationship. So why do you think some of this is?
I think it could be the spotlight effect. So I know you know this, Eva, but it's where we overestimate the extent to which other people notice or judge our appearances or behaviour. So I might think that someone immediately noticed the small scuff that I have on my shoe, or that my hair's not quite fallen right that day, that's what they're narrowing in on. It's the same as when you have a spot and you think everyone is looking at it, but no one really cares. So we're just really overestimating the extent that other people are judging us.
I think that's absolutely right. And I also have a hypothesis that there's something about the framing of networking that makes it so intimidating. So to your point about loving a party, a social event, and feeling like you can go and talk to anyone, but in the same situation, but with business people, clamming up. Actually, I think the word networking really implies that it's going to be a transactional outcome, that you're in there to get something from someone. And I think often people think that they're too genuine a person to build these fake relationships based on a need for something from the other person.
Yeah, absolutely.
So like it or not, networking is here to stay. So we may as well hack our brains to, if not enjoy it, at least get better at it.
On that note, let's hear from our first guest for today, experienced networker, Jo Preston.
Hi, Jo. Lovely to see you. Can you start by just introducing yourself and telling us why you're such an experienced networker, please?
Hi, I'm Jo Preston. So I am a director at integrated communications agency Team Spirit. So I guess networking kind of comes with the territory. I've been doing it to a degree for a long time. I think part of that is then hearing lots of horror stories from myself and colleagues about where it's gone wrong and what we've all learned from that.
Okay, great. So would you say you're a natural networker?
No, I'm not sure very many people are, though. I mean, I could pick out 1 in 100 people that love to walk into a room full of people they don't know. Most of us have massive imposter syndrome and learn to overcome those challenges for the greater good rather than necessarily enjoying it.
So in your experience, what are some of the main things people worry about when they're faced with a networking situation?
I think room full of people you don't know. I mean, one of the classics is seeing someone that you have met and not having a clue who they are, or in my case, having a fairly terrible recollection for faces. So walking about a room in sort of slight terror that someone is going to be somebody you know. Names too can be an issue. I mean, I had a situation relatively recently, actually a setting that wasn't work, but was my kid's school, where I went to introduce somebody that I'd known for years and halfway through the introduction realised that I actually did not know the person's name. Obviously could and should have styled it out, but got myself in such a panic that I completely failed to style it out. And it was fairly obvious that I just had a complete mind blank and I just had to own up with it and run with it. But I think we've all had those situations, and sometimes it's reminding yourself of that that helps you get through these moments.
So when you're at an event, what are you looking for in other people?
Authenticity. I mean, I think the whole word networking is one that I don't like because it suggests working the room. It suggests sort of something that is disingenuous, and that's not something that I particularly enjoy. I don't enjoy small talk. I don't enjoy people looking over my shoulder. I think we've probably all been at events where somebody's talking to you and really looks like they're looking for someone more important to speak to, and those aren't fun. So I think the name needs a bit of a revamp for me, because really it's actually all about if you speak to one person, have a great conversation and really meet them properly, that is networking. but it's not what the word sort of brings up in your mind.
So true. So I find often at conferences or any other multi-day event, there might be a dinner or a drinks component. And sometimes the introduction of alcohol can be a great icebreaker in itself, but it can also lead to issues, right?
It definitely can. I think alcohol is a massive pro and a massive con, and obviously not all of us drink, but it's very easy to feel that having that glass of wine sort of helps the nerves and gets the conversation started. But I think also beware the alcohol. One glass of wine might help you, several do not. And one of my absolute favourite networking stories is not mine, it's a colleague's, but harks back to a journalist event that she attended with clients many years ago, I have to say, where a lot of alcohol was had. And two of the journalists, let's say, did more than meet each other that evening. And then a month or so later, they were at a conference, again, same client, my colleague there is the PR, and one had completely forgotten meeting the other, to the embarrassment of the other, but to the delight of my colleague, who proceeded to tell them exactly where they'd met and what had actually happened. So beware the alcohol, because it could lead to consequences that you probably don't want in at a later date.
Thank you so much, Jo. That was brilliant. Lots of notes taken. You're a star.
Thank you.
God, I've got so much time for Jo, and I just think it's so reassuring that even a really experienced veteran like Jo still feels that incredible unease at a networking event. And I think it just helps us to remember that everyone feels that awkwardness to some degree. It's kind of liberating to realise that you're in the same boat, so the best thing to do is just get stuck in and go for it. I mean, for me, I think one of the things that sometimes happens when I start worrying and overthinking about things is that I can feel myself go into fight or flight mode. And I feel myself going into this because I start actually sweating and becoming hot. And that's obviously our body's way of getting us ready and adrenalized to be able to run away if we need to do so.
That's a really good point. And one of the best pieces of advice I've ever been given is that adrenaline rush that makes you feel really anxious. It's actually a very similar emotion to what you feel when you're excited. So if you can mentally reframe that into, this is an exciting thing that I'm about to do, you can almost repurpose that energy that you're experiencing.
One thing I thought that was interesting that she talked about was forgetting names and stressful situations. This happens to me all the time, and I remember it as soon as the conversation has ended. What's going on here?
There's a couple of different things, but one of the ones that I think is most at play is probably our hormones. So stress triggers the release of cortisol, which plays a critical role in our body's stress response. And cortisol can increase memory in certain situations, but actually when you experience chronic stress, it can impair your cognitive function and negatively impacts the hippocampus, which, as we know, is the place where all of your memories live. So high levels of cortisol due to stress, reduced capacity to actually access those memories.
Fascinating. So I think it's interesting, when she talked about authenticity, I think one of the mistakes people can make is start to question their own authenticity and how they're coming across, which makes them hyper-focused and almost spotlighting too much on themselves. Whereas actually taking yourself out of your body and really listening to what someone else is saying means that you will then come across ironically more authentic, because you'll agree at the right points, you'll smile at the right points in the story, you'll be gazing in their eyes and therefore building trust, and therefore come across as more trustworthy and authentic to who you actually are.
Yeah, and I think the smile is actually a really important point, because we can tell when people's smiles aren't authentic, in the same way that you look at a photo of yourself and say, I don't actually look happy in there, that feels posed. But we know that a genuine smile not only involves the muscles around the mouth, but also around the eyes. So when you look at a photo and say, my smile doesn't reach my eyes, you can tell that it's not a genuine response. Like right now, Ziva, I can tell that you've got a genuine smile based on the way that your eyes are lighting up while looking at me.
That is because I am smiling at your face, because you're making me happy with your story.
Right, I think it's time to hear from our expert guest, organisational psychologist and networking guru, Dr. Amantha Imber, to get some hacks to make us more effective and enthusiastic networkers.
Hello, Amantha, how are you?
I am very well.
Good, fantastic. So could you please introduce yourself and give us an outline of the work that you do?
So my name is Dr. Amantha Imber. I'm an organisational psychologist, which basically means I help people feel better and work better when they're at work. So I run a behavior change consultancy called Inventium, and we work with companies all over the world helping people do better and feel better at work. And I host a podcast called How I Work, where I interview top performers in all sorts of fields around what are the rituals and hacks and strategies that they use to get the most out of their day.
Wonderful. So how do you feel about networking generally? Is it something you enjoy doing?
Oh gosh, I hate networking so much. I was very shy as a child, and that continued into my adulthood. So for me, the idea of torture is walking into a room full of strangers and being expected to start a conversation.
So let's think about you walking into a networking event. What's the first thing that you do?
Something I always try to keep in mind is that my instinct when I walk into a room full of strangers is to see it as this ocean of people. But some really good advice I was given is to instead remember it's just islands. People talk in islands, and they might be islands of two people or three or four. And so I keep that in mind. And then I got some great advice from Professor Marissa King on the How I Work podcast, where she said to me, try to find groups that have an odd number. So groups of three or five, for example, because humans tend to communicate in dyads, groups of two. And if you can find a group of three people, chances are one of those people will be slightly on the outer, and they will be really thankful when you join the group so that you can break off and form a little group of two.
That's fantastic advice. Thank you for that. Okay, so you've picked your person and you go over and introduce yourself. Beyond just a massive smile and a nice firm handshake, what are some of the ways that you can put a person at ease and make it a smooth and enjoyable interaction?
Well, I try to think about the energy that I'm getting from the other person. Some people are really high energy, some are lower energy, some are more softly spoken, some are loudly spoken. And I try to match what I'm getting. So a bias that I try to keep in mind is familiarity bias, where we're predisposed to like things or people that feel like they're more similar to us. So if I meet someone and they're quite quietly spoken, I'll try to adjust the volume of my voice and be a little bit more on their quietly spoken wavelength to kind of help with that familiarity bias.
So are you adjusting yourself to be more like them and sort of fit into the surrounding?
I am. It's kind of, I guess, seeing yourself as a bit of a social chameleon. And I don't want to say that I think about compromising my authenticity. I still try to be me, but I try to be me in a way that's going to be more comfortable for the other person.
Fantastic. So you found an available person, you put them at ease with your energy and your body language. But what if the conversation starts to get awkward? Are there any tips that you've got for keeping the conversation fun and memorable?
I don't know about you, but whenever I am asked, so what do you do? What have you been up to lately? I feel like my mind just goes blank. I'm like, what have I been doing? I've been working and I've been parenting. But beyond that, I feel like any interesting thing I have to say completely goes out of my mind. So what I try to do is before a networking event is I have a little think, a little brainstorm with myself to think about what are some interesting things that I have actually been doing in the last month or two that might be interesting conversation starters. I almost try to have those at the ready so that I can jump in and put some interesting seeds, if you like, into the conversation. So that is definitely something that I do spend time doing, which sounds very rehearsed, but I feel like it makes for much more interesting conversation.
I completely agree with that. And are there any particular tips you've got on making a story really memorable for someone?
Yeah, look, I do like to think about the peak end rule. So bias-wise, we're much more likely to remember things right at the beginning and also right at the end. So I do think in the context of networking, how can I finish the interaction on a high? As opposed to letting it just dwindle out because someone needs to use the bathroom, for example. So I think if you can think about when do you conclude the interactions that you're having, so you are leaving on a high as opposed to just letting them dwindle out and then the group slowly disbands. It is a much more helpful way to think about things.
Fantastic, Amantha. Thank you. So given that you're clearly a guru of networking, what advice would you give to people who are really struggling to get motivated with doing this? Like maybe they struggle to sign up for events or they just find it draining working a room.
Well, a really useful strategy for people that are struggling with their motivation or desire to network and be in that situation is a strategy that's referred to as temptation bundling, where you take the unpleasant thing, which in this case is networking, and pair it with something that is enjoyable. So it's something that I do quite a lot in my personal life. Like, for example, I hate being on the exercise bike, but I love watching Survivor, the TV show. But it feels like a guilty pleasure if I'm just sitting down to, you know, watch it on a weeknight. So instead, I pair the two activities together. So I look forward to time on the exercise bike because I get to watch Survivor. So I think about the same thing with networking. What can I pair it with to make it more enjoyable? And sometimes what this has led to in the past is me trying to almost gamify networking, where I will set a goal for myself before an event. It might be to make 3 meaningful connections. And I say to myself, if I can do that, then I'm going to treat myself to a massage or something that feels a little bit indulgent. So where possible, pairing the unpleasant activity with something that is enjoyable, but if you can't do it at the same time, then thinking about how can you reward yourself maybe straight after you've done that unpleasant activity.
God, that's brilliant advice. I'll definitely be doing that in future. Thank you so much. That was wonderful.
My pleasure.
Okay, so some really useful insights there. So let's digest some of the advice we've been given and expand a little bit on the behavioural science. So I think when she talked about the need to be authentic and really stay authentic, it reminded me of the trust equation that's so often talked about in the business world, that there are 4 kind of key components to trust. So the first being credibility, which is about the words you're using, how believable you are, how much you showcase your authority, because we're always looking to see whether people are experts in a certain situation. The second being reliability. So are we able to keep our promises? Because we don't like it when situations are ambiguous, for example. We've got a real aversion to that. The third is around intimacy. So this is all about our emotions. And as we know, these powerfully shape our opinions of others. But the fourth one that I think is really interesting, and I think people probably fall down on in these situations, is self-orientation. And this is about being other-focused rather than self-focused. So it's all about our motives, actually. And this is really hard for us because we all have this innate ego bias, which is the fact that we all overestimate our own importance. And in particular, we really overestimate our positive qualities and abilities. So I think I'm a better than average driver, for example, as well as 80% of other people that believe the same thing. That's obviously statistically impossible. So to be perceived as really authentic and trustworthy as a result, you actually need to score highly in credibility, reliability, and intimacy, but you also really need to score highly in your selflessness, your ability to listen to others and put them before yourself. And the benefit of being trusted in this way and coming across as authentic is that the way that we've evolved is to form social networks of trust, and we do that through reciprocity. So you give me something and I give you something back. And essentially, that's what networking is all about. So we need to be able to trust the other person that they're going to do the right thing for us, and in return, we'll want to repay them with a benefit in kind. And one other point I wanted to pull out was what she was saying about matching the energy, which I think is some great advice. And the psychology behind that is all really about the chameleon effect, I think, Raffi, isn't it? Which is that this unconscious mimicry of postures, mannerisms, facial expressions are really important at helping people feel as though they're engaging with us. And so it starts to establish a rapport between us and we start to mirror each other. So in the context of networking, really leveraging this chameleon effect means that by subtly mirroring their energy and gestures or even conversational style, really helps to create and establish this rapport and make it more smooth and feel more natural.
You mentioned mirroring the conversational style there, Ziba. And one of my favourite insights in this space is called accent convergence. And this is all based on the theory that things that are similar to us, we are attracted to. And the more similar our attitudes or our beliefs, the more likely it is that that person will be attracted to us. And one way to do it is by having a very similar accent. And it's really interesting. If you pay someone a compliment, often their accent will start to slowly converge with yours, so it will get closer and closer. Whereas if you insult someone, it's accent divergent, so they're more likely to go back into their own accent. So if I've got a strong Welsh accent and you're nice to me, I will slowly become more, what's your accent? Lovely London. But should you insult Wales, where I am from, I will become more and more Welsh over time. So in the context of networking, if you want someone to like you, you could start to make your accent subtly more similar and mirror theirs. Obviously, don't go too far because, as we've just heard, authenticity is very important and we don't want them to think you're taking the piss. And then the final insight that we want to pull out here is the idea of mirror neurons. So the way that we actually identify how similar we are to someone is through a type of brain cell that responds equally when we perform an action and when we witness someone else perform an action. And these neurons play a really significant role in our ability to understand and empathize with others. So to bring it to life, if I smile at you, Ziba, the neurons that help you identify that I'm smiling also identify in your brain. So essentially you're performing a micro expression because your brain sends electrical activity to the muscles in your face. Your zygomaticus muscles in your cheeks are activated. So you have this micro expression. But because that muscle is activated, it sends a message back to your brain that says you are smiling. So your brain actually thinks that you're happier. So me smiling at you makes you smile back at me. So if we want people to approach us, if we want people to think that we're nice, we also need to show them that we're nice in the first place. So approach with a smile, approach with open posture, and people's mirror neurons will kick in and they'll do the same in return.
So the really interesting thing about mirror neurons, I think, is that when people have Botox, because they can't move their faces and express expressions so much, their mirror neurons don't actually fire in the same way that they would do without Botox. So they're actually able to empathize with people less as a result.
So what's the lesson here? Maybe the Kardashians aren't quite as brutal as they might come across. They've just got their face frozen.
Okay, so we've had lots of great advice. So it's now time, I'm afraid, Rafi, to put all that good advice to use and off you go. So I'm keeping everything crossed for you. You're going to be brilliant. And let's see how you got on.
Oh, God.
Okay, so we're here outside the comedy pub in Piccadilly Circus. Finally found the pub after wandering around for about 10 minutes, getting more nervous as I go around. And I'm about to go in the pub and try and find this group of people. I'm very nervous, slightly sweaty, and very much regretting my outfit. But I can't regret it that much, because it's going to help me score a couple of emails, hopefully. So I've decided to really capitalise on the behavioural psychology, and I've doubled up. So not only am I wearing a lime green neon jacket, I'm also wearing an oversized houndstooth coat. My partner often refers to this as my Cruella de Vil chic. But I'm not going to kill any puppies. Okay, here we go. We're going in.
So where were you, Raz?
So I actually went to a behavioural science networking event. It's an event that I would normally go to, which is quite handy because it meant that I could feel more genuine going in and having conversations.
And talk to me about the rationale behind the amazing outfit that you talk about.
Gosh, the outfit. My eyes are still hurting. So the psychology says that bright colours can enhance memory and recall, particularly for first encounters. So I chose to stand out like a sore thumb wearing this neon green outfit and this really loud pattern. And the principle behind that is that distinctive items attract more attention, so they're more likely to be encoded into your memory effectively.
So this is the von Restorff effect, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Hopefully people are going to see me and they're going to want to talk to me.
based on the expert advice, I'm going to get a little treat and couple that with something unpleasant, which is exactly what I'm about to do when I start networking. So neck oil for me, I'll be feeling happy. It's going to make my life feel a lot easier. So I'm going to attribute the positivity I feel around my favorite drink. Hey, can I get a pint of neck oil, please? Thank you so much.
So I decided to take Amantha's advice around treat bundling, and I got myself a drink, which also doubles up as a bit of Dutch courage, but at the same time keeping in mind Joe's advice to beware the alcohol, so just sticking to one drink.
Okay, so you've rocked up in your eye-catching outfit, you've made yourself really comfortable with a lovely pint, and now, Raffi, it's time to get stuck in and make some proper connections.
So I spotted a group of three people that I'm going to go over and talk to. Before I do that, I want to build up a bit of courage. I'm going to perch myself in their eye line, so that they're exposed to me a bit more, build up that familiarity so that when I go over, hopefully the conversation's going to flow.
Yeah. So the outfit also helps with multiple exposures and seeing people again, because when they look back, they'll think, oh yes, that was the woman in the lime green jacket. So they've already formed an association between who I am, so future meets means they're more likely to remember me.
So I'm stood leaning against the bar. I think they might have spotted me, partly due to the lime green jacket. The coat has come off, it's very warm in here. I'm going to do one more exposure and then I'll head over. Right, I've definitely just made some eye contact. I think it's time to go over.
Okay.
Hello, lovely to meet you.
Hi.
Really nice jacket.
Thank you so much.
Beautiful colour, I really like it.
Thank you so much, it's quite bright.
Yeah.
You like it?
Bright colours, making your mood lift up.
Oh, that's lovely. Did you see me coming?
Yeah, I immediately saw this green jacket. I was like, wow, that's a brave statement. Well,
I feel brave. Yeah, it's helping. Thank you.
The jacket is a total hit. And it also doubles up as an icebreaker.
I think he was being kind, but it definitely did the job. Next step, find common ground.
Books. Yeah, we're
just okay.
Books and communities. Is there anything that you recommend?
Oh, my favourite two books that I normally recommend are 100 Things Every Designer Needs to Know About People. And then the other one is Smarter Screen. I really like that one.
Smarter Screen.
Slomo and Benazzi. And the other one is, oh, I've forgotten her name. They're really good ones, especially from a UX perspective. They're both really good. Smarter Screen, yeah.
So I did get slightly flustered when I couldn't remember the name of the books I wanted to tell them about. But I did find a potential lead.
Great, so the plan here is to find them again later, after repeated exposure.
Absolutely. My next job was to find a person to have a one-on-one chat with, which probably could have gone better.
Hi, what's your name?
My name's Raffi, what's your name?
My name is Margot. So what are you doing here? What are you into? Like, what brings you here?
I'm actually here for the behavioural science meetup. What about you?
Yeah, same. Oh, nice. It's great to get all these people in like one room.
There's so many people here. I didn't expect this good a turnout, actually.
Yeah, it is quite overwhelming.
A little bit. There's lots of people.
Anyway, like, great to meet you.
Ooh, wow, that was hard.
Yeah, Margot seemed slightly disinterested in talking to me. She was sort of looking over my shoulder and looking for a quick getaway. But instead, I decided to find another individual for a more productive chat. Came across a lovely Scottish lady, a perfect opportunity to try accent divergence by very slightly mirroring the way she spoke.
We did a really cool piece that like looked at the cultural differences, but for food packaging, where we looked at Oreos and Cadbury and some other ones, but across Brazil, States, UK and India. In the actual packaging design, like in Brazil, a lime is yellow and a lemon is green. So like even just having those nuances in the packaging are like such an important consideration, but like in India it's more like about being able to share something, whereas in the UK or the States it's more about having an individual thing that is for you. So like we were redesigning like the Cadbury's packaging and the Oreos packaging, but based on these individual differences that like we wouldn't have got to if we hadn't considered it.
Wow, Raf, that was really subtle, but just enough to bridge the gap between the two of you.
Thanks, Seems. It was actually really tricky. You don't want to sound like you're actually trying to impersonate them, but just do enough to make them feel like you've got something in common. So, based on another piece of Amantha's advice, I've prepared something to share with people around an interesting thing I've been doing at work recently.
There are so many emotions that go through within a short space of time. It has to be broken down. The combination of muscle groups are quite complex. So just on a conversation, like, I mean, people do it live. We've got some guys in the team that will do live facial expression analysis. And actually, they are the most detail-focused people.
That really worked, Raf. That was brilliant.
Yeah, I think people were really engaged. They were asking me lots of questions and I was feeling much more confident. So you can hear me just firing back at them there. I think after that, all that was left to do was loop back round to the potential lead I'd discovered in my previous group interaction. After multiple exposures in my bright suit, breaking the ice and finding high-level common ground, I had managed to engage him for a deeper interaction and even got a promising suggestion of meeting again.
So lovely to meet you.
Yeah. Maybe I'll see you in the next one.
Yeah.
If it happens.
Absolutely.
Or if you're going to create it.
Well, you've set it up now, so it'd be rude for us not to, really, wouldn't it?
If you do it, let me know.
No, thank you.
All right, guys. Have a good evening.
Bye-bye. That is an absolute relief. I no longer feel sick. I actually quite enjoyed that. I have 23 new connections on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
5 pending. We'll see. But that went so much better than I could have imagined. I'm keen to do that again. Should we come back?
Wow.
You were on fire by the end of that rapping. That was amazing. Love that.
From feeling really intimidated by it all, I felt really propped up by the psychological hacks. So I wasn't standing around getting more awkward and nervous about where to go or what to do next.
And the jacket definitely worked.
The jacket did work. It actually felt like a super suit, knowing that there was actual science behind it. Although one unintended consequence of the bright jacket was it exacerbated my spotlight effect. So I think I needed to shift my attention to others instead of focusing on what I was wearing and just get out of my head.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I think that might explain why you forgot an author of one of the books that you were talking about, because you were in your own head. So one tip, I suppose, there would be to put yourself out there as quickly as possible so that you're listening to others and you're other focused rather than self-focused at that point. I think another tip is when interactions don't go well. So you had a really difficult interaction with Margot, but what you did brilliantly there, I thought, was that you moved away quite quickly. You noticed that it wasn't going to go anywhere and you decided to make better use of your time. So that's definitely one, because interactions aren't always going to go well. Sometimes you will have difficult interactions and you'll be speaking to people that you're just not vibing with.
Well, I hope you learned something about the psychology behind what makes networking so challenging.
And how to use it to your advantage, whilst maybe even enjoying it. Thank you to our wonderful guests, Jo Preston and Dr. Amantha Imber, for their top insights.
How to Hack the Brain is a Fascinate Productions podcast for Cowrie Consulting, part of the VCCP group. This episode was produced by Frankie Taylor, Rowan Bishop and Richard Willen.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can press follow to be notified about new episodes and leave us a review to help spread the word.
Thanks for listening and see you next time.